from the front lines of the green rush. This is Green Entrepreneur, where business owners talk about how they found success in cannabis and how you can too.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Entrepreneur podcast. My name is John Small, and I am the editor-in-chief of Green Entrepreneur and greenentrepreneur.com. Are you ready to get a little psychedelic? My guest today is Paul Austin, who is a psychedelic entrepreneur and a microdosing coach and the founder of The Third Wave, which is a website that specializes in psychedelic literacy and education. Paul also speaks at conferences across the country about responsible psychedelics use. So I wanted to talk to Paul about the health benefits of microdosing both psychedelics and cannabis, and also the business opportunities down the line. Are psychedelics the next cannabis? We all know about the green rush, but can we expect the kaleidoscope rush? I am here with Paul Austin, who is the founder and CEO of The Third Wave. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan. I'm really excited to do this today.
What was the second wave, by the way? I must have missed it.
The 60s.
The 60s.
The 60s. You're probably just getting started as a little human in that. So the counterculture was the 60s, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when really like psychedelics and things like psilocybin mushrooms and LSD started to enter Western consciousness again after like a break of thousands and thousands of years. So, and now we're in the third wave, which is really about the responsible and intentional use of psychedelic substances for healing and transformation is usually how I put it.
Yeah. And the third wave does what exactly? Tell us about your elevator pitch of the third wave.
So we're a platform that educates people about the intentional and responsible use of psychedelics for specific purposes. So we have a lot of content, you know, we have a podcast, we have online courses that people can take if they want to be able to utilize this in a safe and effective way. And we're really looking at what's it going to take so that millions of people, because psychedelics are kind of where cannabis was maybe 10 to 12 years ago. So there's this growing interest. There's a lot of research coming out. There's clinical trials being done. There's more and more sort of like people get it. The stigma is starting to kind of come off. And so we're really looking at what does it look like to build a platform that educates millions of people. And then once they're educated, how do you make sure they can go have a really great experience with these substances?
So I want you to educate us and me specifically about psychedelics and about kind of, I'm interested in the effects they have, the legality. Let's talk first of all about the legality of psychedelics. So it's unclear to me, is that a gray area, sort of the way cannabis was 10 years ago?
And or? Even more gray, okay. I would say, than cannabis. The way that cannabis was basically legalized was on a state-by-state basis. So we had first medical marijuana in California in 96, and then eventually by 2012, Colorado and Washington, I believe, had legalized cannabis. And then we had Oregon, Alaska, California, you know, a number of other dominoes fell. With psychedelics, it's a little bit different. So there's a group called MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. They are working with the FDA, so the federal government, to get MDMA approved to treat PTSD through federal clinical trials. So the approach for psychedelics is, on the one hand, medical. And the medical route is going through the FDA. And that's both for MDMA and also psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, to treatment-resistant depression. The other sort of grassroots campaign that's developing right now is the decriminalization movement. So we just saw this in Denver, where Denver, the city, decriminalized psilocybin mushrooms. The city of Oakland decriminalized all plant medicines. So psilocybin mushrooms, ayahuasca, San Pedro, iboga. These kind of, we won't go too deep into the details, but these are plant medicines that people use that are psychedelic. And so basically decriminalization just means that law enforcement isn't really focused on it. But there's no sort of, especially in the United States, there's no place where it's legal yet. And then really on a global scale, there's no place where it's quote unquote legal yet. You have places like Jamaica where it's just like not on the books. So people will go down there to do mushrooms. You have places like the Netherlands where truffles are legal, which are very similar to mushrooms, but slightly different, where you can go into like a smart shop and buy truffles. But for the most part, it's still very difficult to acquire these things because there's so many legal boundaries in the way.
Yeah. So how does one acquire them? And is it through somebody like you? Or like, how do you, although I don't want to, the cops are standing right outside. No, but how does one access them? I mean, it, you know, can we even talk about that?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's really like, so you look at specific jurisdictions, right? So last year I started this retreat center in the Netherlands called Synthesis. And as part of that, we have an old church that we lease, we host retreats for people. They fly in from all over the world. And then we give truffles there to people at the retreat center, because in the Netherlands, that's fine. Legal and okay to do.
Right.
But in the United States, it's really sort of like who you know.
Yeah.
In a way, like you have a friend or, you know, someone you've met at maybe an event, or a lot of people are now growing their own mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So that's what was so big about what happened in Oakland, is when these things are decriminalized, then a lot of people feel like, oh, I feel safe in my home, growing my own medicine, growing my own mushrooms, and then I can work with it, you know, in the way that I want. Besides that, then there's like sketchy things like the dark web, which you probably know of, you know, using cryptocurrency, but that's a little, and then based on the jurisdiction in Canada, you can get some like psychedelic analogs. So there's something called 1P LSD, which is very similar to regular LSD, but it was invented in like 2014 or 2015 just by changing, you know, a little bit of the molecule.
Yeah.
And so like if you're in Canada and you work with a doctor, you can acquire that. But like if you order it to the United States, it's technically illegal under federal law. So it's really just, it's a bit of a clusterfuck still, you know, it's a bit of an issue. And if someone kind of
and not regulated, so you never, it's a little bit scary because you don't, when you're dealing with psychedelics, you kind of want to know where you're getting it from.
You want to know where you're getting it from. And especially this is good for anyone who's listening to this, like things like LSD and MDMA, which are the more synthetic ones, it's always good to test those if you have them to ensure that they are the real things, because people will mix things with the synthetic things that, you know, you don't necessarily want. Mushrooms are a little bit of a different story, because if you're growing mushrooms or you're getting mushrooms, it's pretty easy to identify if they're real mushrooms, you know?
When you say test, do you mean like take them to a lab, or is there like a site test that you can do with the MDMA?
You can get like a take-home testing kit. They're like 10 bucks online. You can get that and order it to your house, and it's really easy. And that's what, you know, what we even talk about. It's really the harm reduction perspective. It's like, if you're going to do these, make sure they're the right substance, make sure that they're safe, make sure you're not getting any sort of like weird stuff with it. That's a really important part of it.
So let's talk about microdosing, because that is such a buzzword in not only in the psychedelic area, but also in the cannabis area. People mm-hmm. talk about microdosing and mm-hmm. social dosing. And first of all, just define that for us. I mean, it sort of is what it sounds like, but better to have an expert define that for us. What does that mean?
Yeah. So a lot of people, when they hear about microdosing, they're just like, oh, it's, you know, taking a low dose of something, right? Mm-hmm. Like a microdose. But I think the important part of clarification is it's really about not just taking a small dose, but really taking a small dose over an extended period of time. So when it comes to something like cannabis with an edible, that's probably anywhere from like a 1 to 2 milligram edible, which companies like Kiva, I believe, sell now in like little chocolates, mm-hmm. which is about 1 milligram is about a tenth of what, you know, a regular dose might be, like 10 milligrams for an edible. It's similar with psychedelics. With LSD, a regular dose is 100 micrograms. With a microdose, it's about 10 micrograms. With psilocybin mushrooms, a regular dose is 2.5 to 3 grams. So a microdose is going to be anywhere from 0.2 to 0.3 grams. So it's about a tenth of a regular dose. And the idea specifically with microdosing psychedelics is you do it twice a week over a period of 5 to 6 weeks. So it's not like you're just doing it once and you see what happens. It's more like a habit of meditation, right? When you start meditating, you're not going to see like significant results after you just meditate once, right? What happens is you get in the practice of it, you start doing it consistently, and then over time it starts to change actually physically the gray matter in your brain. It's a similar approach with microdosing. If we're doing this consistently, then we can start to integrate new habits and new ways of being. And that's sort of how I got into this, you know, back in about 10 years ago when I first started working with psychedelics, I would only be doing higher doses. And for like a week or 2 weeks after, I would have this afterglow effect where just life flowed a little bit easier. Hmm. It was easier to eat healthy. It was easier to really connect with people. It was easier to stay disciplined in terms of going to the gym. There was just this sense of like self-love that came from that.
Yeah.
And so when I heard about microdosing, I was like, this is a great way to just keep that afterglow.
Without going. Like having a crazy trip that you can really only go on maybe once a year.
Exactly. Because I mean, doing something like LSD, it's like a 12-hour thing. It's a huge commitment. Whereas with a microdose, it's like, it's sub-perceptible. And that's a really important element of microdosing.
What do you mean sub-perceptible?
You don't really notice it so right. much. It might be very, very subtle in terms of you notice you just have slightly more of a lift. But the mm-hmm. idea isn't to get high from it. The idea is just to have some of the underlying effects. So for example, on inflammation or just on general kind of brain patterns and helping the brains to communicate, the hemispheres of the brain to communicate better. Mm. But the idea with microdosing is you don't feel it. You don't feel it really even a little bit. It's just under the surface and it's sort of working its magic that way.
Sounds really fun.
Yeah, it is. And it's great to do in nature. It's great to do, you know, as part of a habit with meditation. I think the cool thing with microdosing is it can be combined with yoga, meditation, hiking, breath work, even cannabis as well. So there's a lot of
Let's talk about cannabis microdosing. First of all, do we consider cannabis a psychedelic?
Many people would, right? Mm-hmm. So the word psychedelics means mind manifesting. And it comes from, you know, psyche, which in the Greek kind of terminology means soul. And then delos, which means to manifest. So we're really like manifesting.
Like de la soul.
Yeah, we're really manifesting those elements. Or psyche is more the mind, you know, delos is manifesting. So mind manifesting.
Yeah.
And cannabis, if you have a high dose of cannabis, if you're eating an edible and you do it with some specific purpose, you know, I've seen stories of therapeutic centers that are now opening in places like Denver, where they're combining cannabis with psychotherapy as a way to dive deeper into like the subconscious and the unconscious. So from my perspective, depending on how it's used, it can definitely be a psychedelic.
Certainly worked for like the Beatles and Notorious B.I.G. I mean, people I'm thinking about that are known to have smoked a lot of pot during their creative endeavors. And I noticed a lot of jazz musicians have told me that it helps kind of slow down one part of the mind while the kind of improvisational part of the mind is more alive. I don't know.
Yeah, because you're
opening. It's all anecdotal, so, you know.
But it's true. You're opening those aspects. I forget which hemisphere is like the analytical and the creative, but it seems to be like with cannabis and with psychedelics, you're opening the creative element. And that means there's a sense of disruption going on. There's a sense of, that's why even when we get high, we become a little more scattered. We can't focus as much on task-oriented things. But what that does is it opens up the more creative elements of who we are, which allows us to sort of like just get into this flow when we're playing music or we're writing or we're, you know, connecting with friends. Or I love to do it when I'm podcasting as well. It's just a great way to like connect and plug in and drop in.
By the way, we are not doing it, which I'm kind of bummed about because we should have done this.
It's 10 a.m. on a Tuesday morning.
10 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, but I wouldn't have minded having a little lift. So let's talk about the business opportunities here. I mean, it's very young, obviously, but like we're saying, it's sort of like cannabis might have been 10 years ago. If you are an entrepreneur and you're interested in this field, you know, what are some opportunities that you see on the horizon?
So a lot of the opportunities right now, I'll just sort of give some context about what's already happened. So in the psychedelic space specifically, there's a lot of nonprofits. So the main organization, MAPS, which I mentioned earlier, they're a nonprofit. They've fundraised over $70 million in total to kind of push these MDMA trials through. Over the past couple of years, there's been a new organization that's popped up called Compass Pathways, which raised about $35 million in investment from Peter Thiel, Christian Angermeyer, Mike Novogratz, who's in crypto and whatnot. And then there's another company called Atai, which fundraised about $40 million. So there's a few startups that have raised significant capital that are really looking at the medical use of psychedelics. So that's one thing to be aware of from a clinical perspective and entrepreneurial perspective. You know, the first major business opportunities within psychedelics are going to be more in the medical.
Just the way cannabis was. Yeah.
Just the way cannabis was. And that's going to be largely like bigger organizations that have a lot of funding because with all the restrictions on psychedelics from a research perspective, it requires a lot of money to actually get these trials done and push them through so that these can become approved medicines. So really it won't be until 2021 or 2022 that we see more and more and more opportunities popping up from a business perspective, because at that point, that's when MDMA and psilocybin will become available in clinics. So then you'll start to see clinics popping up. There will be more and more opportunities for IP in terms of patenting certain elements of what's going on with mushrooms or these various other chemicals that are now being utilized. And that's an interesting thing about psychedelics. You know, when we think about psychedelics, we think of mushrooms, LSD, maybe ayahuasca. But the fact is there's hundreds and hundreds of chemicals that will tweak your body chemistry in a certain way. So if you want to have more energy, there might be something for that. If you want to be more empathic and open, there might be something for that. If you want to, you know, be super creative, there's probably going to be something for that. So I think that's another element that we're going to see is there's going to be all these kind of analogs that start to pop up. So that's the clinical side. From the more cultural side, that's why I emphasized the decriminalization part earlier, because when decrim happens, then it just opens up more gray area opportunities. So what we're going to see from that perspective is, for example, in a place like Oakland, where these things are decriminalized, you'll see opportunities pop up where people basically create spaces where you can come do psychedelic, but they won't actually sell the substance itself. The way that psychedelics are going to roll out, it's not going to be like cannabis, where it was, you know, medical on a state-by-state basis. You had a green, you know, a medical card, you could go in, whatever, get a prescription. And now we have dispensaries all over the place. In fact, we were just talking about this for the podcast. You know, there's this place that just opened up today.
The Lowell Cannabis Cafe.
Yeah. Where you can go in and you can actually smoke this, right? With psychedelics, it's going to be probably 10 to 15 years before you can actually go into a dispensary to buy mushrooms.
And that's just because we're just not there culturally yet or politically.
We're not there culturally from an educational perspective as well. You know, most people, if they think of psychedelics, they think of the counterculture, they think of escaping from reality, they think of, you know, it's just a distraction, bad trips, music festivals, all these sorts of things. Whereas really what psychedelic use is about is preparation, so preparing adequately, because when you're taking a psychedelic, you're digging deep into your own psyche, your unconscious and your subconscious. For a lot of people, they've never done that before. So it's like, what's going to come up? We don't know. So for any psychedelic, you need to prepare. When you do it, you need to pay attention to set and setting, the experience itself. So what's your mindset going in? What's the environment in which you're taking it? And then integration. So after you have this experience, how do you integrate it? And to train and educate a mass populace about that, it's basically going to be akin to when everyone had to learn how to drive cars. So we didn't just like, when cars became a thing, it's not like we were just like, you get a car and you get a car and you know,
yeah.
You had to take a test. You had to get a driver's license. You have to do the year beforehand where you can prove that you can handle yourself in a vehicle like this. When psychedelics roll out, it'll be very similar to that. Well, you'll probably have to get some sort of license to say, yeah, I get actually how to do this in a way that's not dangerous or destructive or whatever else it might be. And I just feel like for us to get to that point, there's just going to be a lot of infrastructure that needs to be built to reach that.
Yeah.
Reach that place.
So you can tell me if this is too personal a question, but how are you able to monetize what you do? Like, is it more as a consultant? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's been lots
still trying to figure it out.
There's been lots of things that we've been working with and we've been doing. You know, the key at this point in time from a business perspective, as someone who runs a company, is really about brand. And it's how do you develop community? How do you develop content? And how do you basically put yourself in a place where as more and more momentum around this generates, it really starts to pour into what you're doing. So even like when it comes to the third wave, we've been hesitant to say, we're committing to doing this. We're raising all this capital to get behind this because we're still so early on in this sort of industry that we want to sort of like keep open some level of flexibility in terms of the thing that we really want to focus on. So right now it's education. We have like an online course where people can purchase a course to be able to do microdosing in a community in a safe, effective way where they have support, where they have coaching. So that's part of what we've done is coaching. We do events. There is some element of consulting, which I would kind of loop into coaching to a certain degree in terms of when people want to do this. Retreats. We started this retreat center last year in the Netherlands. So based on the jurisdiction, there are retreat possibilities and stuff like that. And really the long-term play is like, what does it look like to build a platform? So you have, for example, in cannabis, you have organizations like Leafly, Weed Maps.
Green Entrepreneur
as the media brand,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, as the media, yeah.
Right? And so I'm looking more and more like, what does it look like to build a platform where if you have all these people who are coming to learn about psychedelics, then how do you ensure that you not only teach them the safe, effective way to do it, but you also can connect them to therapists or clinics or retreat centers that are starting to open up so that they have access to the safe, effective use. So right now it's really like domain expertise, branding. In the future, there's going to be more and more of a sense of really starting to focus in on what we specifically want to do.
So tell us a little about your backstory. What were you doing before you discovered psychedelics and decided that you wanted this to change the trajectory of your life?
It's interesting because for me, it's always been the two are so intertwined. So when I was 16, just a little bit of backstory, I grew up in West Michigan in a city called Grand Rapids. It's quiet, it's conservative, more traditional, small town Midwest. You know, vibes. For most of my adolescence, I was taught, as many of us were, that cannabis was bad. Obviously, that psychedelics were bad, that drugs in general are bad. And essentially, when I was 16, I smoked cannabis for the first time and was like, this doesn't, seem that bad.
That bad to me. Yeah.
Just laughing a lot, having a really good time with friends. And I even, it was to a point where I'd smoke cannabis before I drank alcohol for the first time. Right. So I was always just like, I've always been more introspective. I've always been more curious about these things. And then when I was 19 in college, I had a friend who, the same friend who I smoked weed with for the first time, my best friend in high school, he's like, I have some mushrooms. Do you want to do them over like a winter break? And I did them with him and another friend and was just like, these are really interesting. Did LSD about 5 months later. And that to me is what solidified it. It was a chance to really step into what I believe to be true, because there's so many stories that we have going on in culture. There's so many ways that we've been conditioned to think about things that it's sometimes hard to really pay attention to what it is that we want and what it is that we want to do with our life or our career or our relationships or whatever else it might be. And so when I was doing a lot of my psychedelics when I was 19 or 20, I had this open canvas on which to paint the rest of my life. And so when I was going through those experiences, basically there were a few things that came to me that were really important, which was one, in my 20s, just expand as much as possible, just put myself in uncomfortable situations, just travel as much as possible, try to start a few businesses, just kind of fail and fail and fail and see what that brings me. So basically from those early psychedelic experiences, I was like, I just want to create and I want to do something that's impactful, that really leaves a mark, that's not just like another corporate job or going to grad school, but really like trying something new. So essentially when I graduated from school, I moved abroad. I taught English in Turkey for a year. From that, I started my first business, which was an online English school. And then in 2015, I had that business was doing okay. I had a little bit of extra time and I started microdosing. And I was living in Budapest at the time and I was with a couple other friends on a high dose of LSD. And we were just talking about like the future, where this is going. And we were noticing just like, okay, cannabis is now becoming legal. You know, by 2015, 4 states had legalized it. It was clearly gaining momentum. There was all this research coming out about psychedelics. Microdosing was starting to become a thing. And we were just like, clearly, like if you, at that point, if you had gone online and looked up stuff about psychedelics, it just like, the design was terrible. There really wasn't good messaging about it. There really wasn't good branding about it. And we wanted to create a story around psychedelics that would appeal to like a mainstream narrative and audience. Mm-hmm. Because again, getting back to those early psychedelic experiences, I wanted to put myself in a place where I could be super impactful, because what I learned was like culture, the way it is very sick to some degree. And that these substances, psychedelics, hold tremendous potential to help people remember who they are, and then through that process, actually live a life that they want to live. And so I was like, what better way to do that than to educate as many people as possible and start with microdosing? Because when a lot of people hear about psychedelics, there's a sense of fear that comes up. There's a sense of resistance because they've heard about, you know, the challenging experiences that people have. They've heard about, you know, bad trips, so to say. So we were like, okay, if we're going to try to get this as far and wide as possible, then a really good way to start that process is through microdosing, just getting people to take a little bit, understanding how that might benefit them. And then as they become more and more comfortable with that process, if they want to go deeper into the experience, you know, they can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely your, I guess, you know, we call it canna-curious in the cannabis industry, but I guess it's psychedelic-curious. We'll have to come up with a better term.
We'll have to come up with a better
term. Yeah, yeah. But I'm completely that audience. So I, although maybe a little different because I had a bad trip, I'm one of those guys that I've also had bad cannabis experiences, but I had a bad trip on mushrooms in my early 20s and sort of said when it was happening, like, I will never do this again. Right. And it was like I did it in all the wrong ways. Like, we took too much. I did it with somebody I didn't know. It was just like everything I did was the wrong way to do it. And I get that, but I'm still terrified of it. Right. But completely intrigued at the same time, because it sounds like when somebody has a good trip, let's say on a high dose, that there is, I mean, I think they hear all the things, you know, Steve Jobs and all these people that had these incredible realizations while they were tripping. What has been your experience? Like, I know it's sometimes hard to explain what it feels like to trip, but what was the experience for you? Or what it may have been different every time, but how do you sort of summarize what it feels like? Are you able to see, is it scary? Is it
enlightening? It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. I feel like, especially in the beginning, when you're not used to looking at those parts of yourself, those parts of your psyche, right? Because growing up, you know, when we're children, we all go through some form of trauma. We all go through stuff that our parents do to us or our community does to us. Some of it's significant, some of it's not so significant. But basically, our job as an adolescent and an early child is to survive. So to survive, we have to repress certain parts of who we are to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So essentially what happens when you take a psychedelic, it's like all that stuff that you had repressed emotionally or somatically or spiritually, whatever else it might be, all that stuff, you basically like go into your unconscious basement and start to unpack it and look at all of it. So when I first started doing psychedelics, it's like all these things that I didn't have this conscious awareness of started coming into my consciousness. And that's difficult to integrate at times. That can be really disorienting. But now it's like, because I've been working with this stuff and I really know all elements of who I am to some degree.
Yeah.
Then even when I'm going into those dark spaces, it's more like the observer's mind where I'm just like observing it and I know it and I don't attach too much to it. But I've had trips like last year, I did a mushroom experience where I cried for like 4 hours straight because I had been repressing all this sadness. And then all of a sudden I have this emotional opening and I just let it all out.
Yeah.
Right? And so for someone who's not comfortable with that, who's not used to being allowed to express emotion, that could
and
be
you're
very,
aware of what's happening, right? You're like, okay, I'm tripping now. This is why that's happening, or not necessarily.
For me, I am.
You
for
are.
Some people, they go into astral projection and crazy visuals and other
ego.
Worlds.
They lose
and,
like the sense of who they are, their self, that the at least the ego self.
The ego self.
For
me, it's always been like the ego sort of there, but what it does is it softens. It softens a lot. And the thing that I always come back to with psychedelics, it's like truth.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, in our day-to-day life, our ego protects us from certain things. And so it has to sort of like lie to us a little bit so that we just keep doing the things that we do. We have our habits, we have our patterns, we have our conditioning. And that's a way that we stay focused. We can stay oriented on something. We continue to, you know, move along in life. What psychedelics do is they sort of shake up the snow globe, right? And they sort of disorient you so you can kind of have that reset. And so when that happens for me, it's just a lot of like, again, this has a lot to do with intention. So depending on what I'm going into an experience for, if I have an intention, for example, to explore why I'm struggling with intimate relationships, right? Like maybe why I've had a number of breakups lately, then if that's the intention that I want to head into, psychedelics will bring me deeper and deeper into that and will essentially help me to understand why it is that I've been struggling with intimate relationships, right? Mm. Or why it is that I have a block in my creativity from a business perspective. Sometimes that's as simple as I haven't been sleeping enough.
Mm.
So then the lesson from the psychedelic experience is take better care of yourself. Sometimes it's because there's a certain behavior or pattern that I'm repeating often, and that it's destructive to wanting to be in better relationships with people. So I need to change that and adjust that. So for me, it's like, it's very practical. It's very pragmatic. And it's very much like I'm on this path of who I'm becoming. There are all these things that get in the way. There are all these obstacles. Psychedelics just let me see those obstacles for what they are and to be able to like problem solve them and address them and sort of get them out of the way so I can continue on my path of who I want to become.
Now, what's your psychedelic of choice? Are there certain ones that make you have certain realizations or feel certain ways, or are they all kind of more or less the same?
So the ones that I've worked with most extensively are LSD, and that was my early days, psilocybin mushrooms, and then ayahuasca are the ones that I've done most often. And those are all fundamentally different. I've also smoked DMT, which is weird. I won't get too deep into that, but it's interesting. So LSD is 12 hours and it's very light. It's very playful. It's very fun. Usually when I do it, it's outside with friends, hiking in nature. And it tends to be more cognitive. It tends to be more insightful. It tends to be more like if I want to have a really great brainstorming session and think about things, LSD will clear out a lot of the stuff so I can just get that sort of understanding. Mushrooms are more somatic. So they're more body-based. So I usually am feeling much more emotion. I'm feeling sadness that I haven't felt in a long time. I'm feeling anger that I don't normally feel on a regular basis. Because I'm someone who's more analytical, then mushrooms give me a chance to really drop into my body and be physically, somatically in my body. Ayahuasca is just like, it's kind of all of that in a way. It's both physical, because it's such a disgusting thing that you drink and people purge from it. So it's definitely like a physical thing that you're going through. It's also mental, but it really is, to me, ayahuasca is that thing that combines the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. So there's also this sense of when I'm doing ayahuasca, there's this sense of direct connection to God, source, divine, whatever else it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, that's also what the research shows. For example, out of places like Johns Hopkins, when they've done research on high doses of psychedelics, to example, show how it's effective at treating depression or addiction or whatnot, they've shown that the more intense of a mystical experience someone has, which is essentially this direct connection to source or something that we can't really define, the more intense that is, the more healing that they have, the more that the longer their healing lasts. And I think that's an important part to explain, because when we think of spirituality or when we think of God or source, there's a lot of stories that we have from mainstream religion, which most of culture is not on board with, you know, at least in places like LA or New York or San Francisco or whatnot. There's a sense of growing out of dogmatic mainstream religion. Mm-hmm. But there's still some of these fundamental truths that come from high doses of psychedelics, which directly lead to healing of physical issues, of mental issues, and then, of course, of spiritual issues. So LSD is more cognitive, mushrooms more body-based, and ayahuasca is sort of all of it.
Now, I know there has been some research done. Do you have concerns that it might be making your brain into mashed potatoes eventually? Or like you don't know, you know, like one of these kind of almost like an NFL player that doesn't know until years later what they've done to their brain. Do you have some concerns about that or not really?
For me, I think a lot of that's still in sort of the propaganda about psychedelics, mm-hmm. right? The becoming a wet noodle, or if you do acid seven times, you'll be clinically insane. A lot of that is just myths. With the research that we know with psychedelics is it's sort of like meditation on steroids. So it's helping with neuroplasticity. There's actually been research done that shows that DMT helps to create new brain cells. We know of hardly anything else that can do that. So there's this neurogenesis that comes from psychedelic use. So I think if anything, it's the opposite. It's with consistent, intentional psychedelic use, you're essentially feeding your brain some sort of like super potion that helps it to adapt, that helps it to learn quicker, that helps it to stay younger. So yeah, and I think that's a really important thing to address, because again, when most people think of this, they think, oh, I'm going insane. And that was even what I thought when I was doing psychedelics in my early days. I was like, this is illegal. Clearly it's legal for a reason. At the same time, I'm obviously having all these amazing experiences. So there was sort of this, it was a paradox of mm-hmm. sorts. It was sort of like, okay, I know this is illegal and I know this is bad, but at the same time, I'm feeling so amazing when I do it.
What's going on?
And that's when I sort of reframed and was like, well, I trust my experience. And when I was like, I really trust my experience, that's when I started to like dig into the research and start reading a lot about it, and was like, oh, there's all of this information and research. Because what a lot of people don't know is like even in the 50s, there was over 1,000 clinical papers that were published about the efficacy of LSD.
It went through a big period of
huge.
And then I guess the 60s shut it down in some way. Like that was the kind of, yeah.
And that's where sort of how we even contextualize it with the third wave. It's like the second wave was about Timothy Leary, you know, like everyone take acid, you know, like sort of irrational, irresponsible, you know, there wasn't really great set and setting. Whereas now that's why this is even rolled out from a clinical perspective, and why we focus so much on microdosing, because as more and more and more people start to do high doses of psychedelics in particular, there's a lot of risk involved, because the chances of someone having a bad trip and a bad experience who's never gone through this before it can be quite high.
Do you recommend having a guide, you know, when you're first starting out, especially on a high dose?
Always on a high dose.
Always.
Always. And you don't need like a trained therapist or whatever else. It might
but
be
somebody
just
who knows what they're doing.
A friend who has done it before, who understands how to hold space, who's going to like basically like take care of you in case you need anything. With microdosing, that's not necessary, which is again why I love microdosing so much, because it's like it's a way to start to work with psychedelics where you don't, it's minimal, it's simple. You don't need like a guide who's there for the experience. But with high dose, especially for someone's first time, if they have the budget, I'd say go on a retreat, do it with like professional facilitators. If though you have some mushrooms and you want to do it at home, find, you know, a friend or someone in your community who can be there for you.
Well, this is so fascinating, Paul. Thank you so much. This is really interesting stuff. It makes me want to go and microdose immediately.
It is. And it's fun to talk about this. And I feel like as a last note, it's, even for a lot of people who are listening to this, I would encourage people to think about how they thought about cannabis 10 to 12 years ago. Because I know there's even a lot of people in the cannabis space who then look at psychedelics and go, oh, well, that's illegal, so it must be bad as well, right? So I would even encourage like digging deeper into this and just people doing their own research into like how it could be useful and, you know, what potential might come from it. And just understanding that psychedelics are sort of the next thing after cannabis. And whereas cannabis is, you know, a substance that we do somewhat consistently, you know, there's products all over the place. The way psychedelics will roll out will be different. It will less be about the product and it's much more about the service, the experience itself. So I just appreciate you having me on here and us getting to
So if people want to find out more about you and more about psychedelics in general, tell us a little bit about that.
So the thirdwave.co
Okay.
Is the website, thethirdwave.co. That's a great place to start. We send out a monthly newsletter. We have a lot of guides about all the psychedelics in terms of their history, in terms of the therapeutic use, in terms of their myths, things like that. So that's a really great place to start. MAPS is another great organization to check out, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. And then probably, you know, after that, we have a podcast as well. So with the Third Wave, we have a podcast that would be great to check out. It's the Third Wave Podcast.
It's a very good podcast. I've heard it.
Glad you liked it. And so that's a really great way for people to get going and get started on this material.
Terrific. Well, thanks again for coming.
Thank you for having me. This is fantastic.
Awesome.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Green Entrepreneur Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and other podcast hosting services. Check us out at greenentrepreneur.com. Download our app at Green Entrepreneur. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We are everywhere and we would love to hear from you. So please give us a shout out. Love to hear from our audience. Until then, we'll THC you later.